let us move on now to Margaret. Mark, you're going to do it standing up, aren't you?
Stand. I'm not sure am I as well lit if I stand. Deborah, I was looking, I was admiring Deborah's light and she
moved the spots.
She looked very beautiful in that light. But this is my role off the edge of the stage now. That's a good light. Okay, let me preface everything I'm going to say today by saying that I believe ultimately we should be spending more money on the arts, not less. In fact, my personal belief, hopefully some of you share it, is that we should be spending absolutely eye-wateringly huge amounts of money on the arts, and I think it's a great shame that we in Britain have never valued the arts to the extent that countries like Germany do, where I've been working a lot, and that we've never really achieve the goal of establishing a national provision of diverse, excellent arts that are available to all. And that prize still lies in the future, I hope. It's an arts made for all the people, available to all the people, owned by all the people, and an arts that plays its part in a society that's founded on economic and social equality. That's the dream for me, and maybe, I hope, for some of us, and that's not my phone. And that's not my dream. The reality, of course, is very, very different from the dream, and the dream's a long way off, and it's probably further away now, that dream, than any time in the last 60 years. I'm not a nice person. I will hit you. If you don't turn off your fucking... Gone? Good. The others have been warned. Right. So, today, more for less. Great. In the future, a lot more, and a lot more of everything. Right, so I do think in the current circumstances, and I would define the current circumstances as circumstances in which there is an economic need to reduce the budget deficit, but that has been amplified and distorted by an ideological desire, which has been added onto that need, to finally dismantle as quickly as possible all that remains of the post-war welfare state. And I do think that's an additional thing to the economic need to reduce the budget deficit. But in the current circumstances, I think we can make more art for less money, but only if we undo some of the damage that was brought about by mistaken, but nearly always entirely well-meaning, arts policies of the last 25 years or so. Now, let me take an example, I hope it's not anecdotal, but I think a concrete example will contribute, of what's happened to a small new writing theatre, slightly abstracted, but based on one that I know very well, in London, that I first started working for as an assistant administrator in 1987. So I can follow the progress of that organisation for about 25 years. Now, I believe this organisation, like a lot of arts organisations that I've come in contact with, which are almost inevitably all theatres, that it's lost its way. And it's not because anyone involved has ever behaved with anything but good intentions and in good faith, but because the arts community has been encouraged to follow a model that doesn't work. My little arts organisation began as part of that 1968 movement, which saw a generation question everything about the world in a way that my generation never has. Every assumption about the economy, family, gender, race, class, blah, 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 were all examined and challenged in a way that I find very exciting and inspiring. And that generation aimed to create a totally new and different culture, a culture that Howard Brenton once defined rather brilliantly as a beneficent cancer. So the idea was that this culture would be totally alien to the host body, which is British society, but that it would gradually transform cell by cell that whole old society until it died, and a totally new culture was born. I guess that one makes it a beneficent cancer. This was reckless and utopian thinking. And my little new writing theatre company originally was founded on absolutely no money at all. But the idea, I guess, was that people in this alternative culture, which I never experienced, would share their money, they would share their food, they would provide crash pads for each other, they would sleep with each other in all sorts of exciting combinations. So really, not that much money was needed. And since the aim was to create a totally different culture, there was no need to present yourself or your work in such a way that it would appeal to the mainstream media, the government, or business, because, hey, they were all going to be gone pretty soon anyway, as the beneficent culture, beneficent cancer, cancer culture, culture cancer, beneficent cancer did its work. Now, look, by the time I arrived, I'm not an old hippie, I have a lot of sympathy for old hippies, but I'm a little bit too young. By the time I joined, there had been a necessary, and I'm sure, you know, from Dawn's experience, an absolutely necessary professionalisation of that post-68 culture. The Little New Writing Theatre now received a rather modest Arts Council subsidy, and there was a little bit of local authority money as well. And in today's terms, I guess we were receiving about £250,000. So not a huge amount. But for this, we did produce 4 to 6 productions of new plays a year, and we commissioned about the same number of plays. So I think we gave value for money. We were there to commission and produce new plays. We delivered them. Today, the same organisation receives, trying to make the sums add up with inflation, blah, 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 but I think they receive about double the amount of money in subsidy, and they can barely afford to produce anything. If they can find some very active co-producers, i.e. producers, co-producers with plenty of money, they can produce a few shows a year. And recently, the commission's budget was substantially reduced. There was a financial problem. One of the things that was cut, many things were cut, was the commission's budget. So they are now in a position to commission fewer plays than we were able to do in 1987. So the artistic mission, the core of this project, to produce new plays, is being realised less and less every year. But no funding body has ever criticised this development in our Little New Writing Theatre. We, as a nation, as a public, as taxpayers, are getting less art for our subsidy. No one seems to mind. What happened? Well, the theatre was told from the mid-80s on to generate more of its income. So it moved to a new, bigger building, lovely building. Ticket sales increase, there's much greater capacity and probably playing to bigger houses. Bar income has increased enormously, room hire. There's now a development department, a marketing department, a board full of lovely people from the world of business. And all the new generated income is paying for a staff that is about 6 times bigger than the staff of 5 people that I joined in 1987. The capacity of the venue has increased 3 times in the move, from about 50 seats to about 150 seats. The running cost of the building and the cost of the staff have increased many, many more times than that. So the result is less art for more money. And this is where I have to tell you some of the most unwelcome news. The staff have professionalised themselves, and I think there was a necessary period of professionalisation that Dawn identified in the 80s. But they have professionalised themselves to the extent that they now dress and equip themselves in a way that is primarily aimed at appealing to the world of business. They pay themselves a little bit more than we paid ourselves in 1987, but not a huge amount. No one's being paid anything more than a modest wage. But they try to think of themselves as being business people, which means they don't work with an insane passion for incredibly long hours, which was the organisation that I joined. They treat their work in the theatre as a job, and they protect their work-life balance. They count the hours, they work from home. Each of them, in some way, regards themselves as an arts consultant seeking the highest possible fee. Fees are normally pretty low, but keeping an objective distance from their work, as you need to do if you're a consultant. So, of course, each person doesn't work in the same way that those ruthlessly committed scruffy hordes of the post-68 culture would have worked. The organisation I joined, as I say, had been professionalised, I think, to a good extent. I actually found that when I joined in 87, a very small staff who'd worked out a way to work very efficiently and to work, make a very small amount of money go a very long way. And I think they'd learnt some of the lessons that you'd learnt. But they were in a good place. And when people would join us from business and the arts, they would come in ready to teach a group of lazy hippies how to do something, come away saying, I need to apply this to my business. You make the money go so far, you all work so efficiently. I'm going to go back and change the business culture. I don't need to change the arts culture. That was their experience. But of course, those scruffy hordes of 68, they were trying to create a completely different culture. But we're trying to appeal to the dominant powers. We're trying to appeal to government and to the business community. So was one of the problems that means that my little arts theatre, New Writing Theatre, is now doing less, more, less for more. They're doing less for more. Was the problem an increase in subsidy that did happen during the previous New Labour administration? I really don't believe that was one of the problems. I've just had the huge privilege of having a play open at the Berlin Ensemble. But it's a play that began with the Claw Fellow over there, Roxana Sill, but we began the whole project for no money, or next no money, a few thousand quid. And it's now being produced in a big production by Klaus Peinen, one of Germany's leading directors, with a huge, very well-subsidised theatre. The Berliner Ensemble received something like about £20 million a year, as do about 40 theatres in Germany. The money is incredible. But the money is spent predominantly on productions, including a permanent company of actors. They have less people in the BE, Berliner Ensemble, in management and administration jobs than arts organisations in the UK that receive about a tenth of that subsidy. But I did notice at the BE that everybody who works there works with that same commitment, that same passion that I recognised from 1987. So I don't think insane passion and commitment and the sense of arts as a vocation has to come with being poor. You could be an incredibly well-subsidised organisation and yet keep the focus on the work and on the artists.
Well, a couple of minutes. Yeah,
just about to finish. They pay themselves very well at the BE, but there are no arts in the business projects, there's no development department, there's hardly any marketing. I was shocked. But they did, last year they paid to 90% houses. Last paragraph. How do we find a way forward if we are, as we will do, make more for less? I think there are some clues in that no money culture of 68, and I think there are other clues in the big European institutions like the Berliner Ensemble. Is each of us making work that appeals to and promotes the dominant power structures, or do we as artists have some kind of alternative vision of society? Most artists in most periods have had some alternative vision. We've more or less given up on that as a project. And should we rewrite the mission statement of my little New Writing Theatre? Its mission statement was originally to produce new plays. But should we be honest and actually say, okay, that's fine, the mission has changed. The mission is now to maintain a staff and a building and to please government and business.